1-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Strikeout for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
All right, welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast, Mariners Pod. Thanks for being here once again. Big podcast for you. We'll talk about the game last night. I guess technically yesterday. Yesterday afternoon as the Mariners fall to Cleveland in game one of the series. We'll get you ready for the ball game tonight as well. Technically this afternoon. 3:10 first pitch, and it is a great pitching matchup. So we'll get you ready for that as well. A lot to get to in this one. Aaron Goldsmith talks with Jim Rosenhaus, so gives you a really good look on the Cleveland Indians. That comes up in just a couple of minutes. Kyle Seager will be by. Shannon Dreher will sit down with Kyle Seager. And it's really an interesting conversation talking about some of what he does in terms of preparation and what he looks at and video and everything that I think you'll really like the insight. So that comes up in a few minutes as well. Also, Greg Green from the marketing staff will be here to pinpoint some of the giveaways coming up for the Mariners, for Mariners home games. So I think you'll enjoy that as well. So a big podcast coming up. Glad you're here. Thanks for being here once again. Yesterday, a tough one for the Mariners. We talked about this series yesterday coming in, how it's going to be tough facing Carrasco in game one of the series, and he lived up to the billing. And then another tough matchup this afternoon that we'll talk about in just a moment. But in general, though, the Mariners really good at bats early in the ballgame. Carrasco pitches into the seventh inning, but the M's certainly gave themselves a chance to get to the bullpen. Carrasco ends up going 6 1/3, 4 hits, 1 run, did walk 3 and struck out 5. The Mariners, I thought, did a pretty good job overall against him, although they put 1 run on the board. But really, Wade Miley on the other side of things, it was a struggle for him really from the get-go, although he did get some help defensively, some double plays to keep him out of trouble for the most part.
The stretch and the 2-2, swinging a ground ball to Seager at third, cuts it off, throw down to second, one, the relay to first, in time double play. Kyle Seager went down after he made that throw, gets up, he's all right. He was able to cut off the ground ball into the hole at short. They go to second to get Uribe, and they double up Cowgill at first. 5-4-3, double play to win the inning.
Well, he was walking the tightrope early. He kept the Indians off the board the first couple of innings, but then Cleveland would get to him, and then the fourth in particular, he struggled with his control in a big way.
And the 3-1 pitch is up and in for ball four. Another bases loaded walk. This one forces in Juan Uribe from third. 2 runs are in here in the bottom of the fourth, and the Indians now lead 3-0.
Yeah, it was just a struggle. 3 2/3 when it's all said and done. 9 hits, 4 walks, 3 runs and a couple strikeouts. Without those double plays, final line would have looked much worse than just 3 runs given the 9 hits and 4 walks. But here's what Wade Miley had to say after the ballgame.
Lost it. I don't know what happened. I obviously didn't feel good going in, but was able to make some pitches and got some ground balls early. But then that was the fourth inning. I just got to thinking something I don't do a whole lot, and so I kind of got mechanical and literally lost it. I mean, that game's 100% on me. I got to do a better job to minimize right there.
You said you didn't feel good going in. Was that in the bullpen coming out?
I mean, just didn't really feel like I had really sharp stuff going in. And obviously, the first inning it showed. I mean, I gave up a bunch of hits, but. I mean, some call it luck. I felt a little lucky to get ground balls when I got them to get out of those innings. But when I got to the fourth inning, just luck ran out. I just really couldn't throw a strike. And that's frustrating. That's the frustrating part, just not making competitive pitches to give us a chance, to give me a chance to even get out of it. When you walk in runs like that, it's tough.
So that's Miley talking about the control issues. That being said, Mariners down 3-0. Going into the sixth inning, and that's when they would get on the board. Despite some pretty fierce wind, Kyle Seager dials distance.
The pitch, swing, hammered high, right field. Cowgill going back onto the warning track. Cowgill looking up, and this is gone about a dozen rows deep for Kyle Seager. Home run number two on the season for Seager. It comes with two outs, and the Mariners are on the board for the first time tonight. It's 3-1 Indians.
That was great to see. Six hits for the M's in the game, two of them from Kyle Seager, a base hit going the other way, and then pulling a long ball, his second home run of the year. So the Mariners down at that point, 3-1, heading into the ninth, and they would start to make things interesting.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a line drive down the left field line. This one is going to be a fair ball in toward the corner. Lynn the turn, heading for second. The ball gets away from Davis in left field after it caroms off the wall. Now he gets to it. The throw to third is going to be cut off by Lindor. So Adam Lind with a leadoff double here in the top half of the ninth inning.
So they'd pull a run back to make it 3-2, but they would not get closer than that.
The 1-2 pitch, curve, swing, and a miss for strike three, and the ball game is over. The Indians take game one of this three-game series, a final score of 3-2. Carlos Carrasco picking up the victory for Cleveland in game one. Wade Miley with a loss now with a record of 0-2, and the Indians capitalizing on a lot of walks.
Yeah, three runs on the board. Give credit to the bullpen, though. Montgomery was outstanding, 2 2/3. One hit, no runs, one walk, and one strikeout.
The 1-2, curve, swing, and a miss for strike three. That's it for Bird and the Indians here in the bottom of the fifth, and Monty has retired the four batters he has faced in relief.
Well, it's fun looking at his stuff out of the bullpen. Even in going long, 2 2/3, still is, sitting essentially 94 miles per hour on the fastball, according to Brooks Baseball, reaching 95.5 miles per hour, which was awfully impressive. And threw a lot of fastballs, 30 fastballs in his outing, 7 curveballs. That's how he distributed things, but mainly working with the fastball, and it was tremendously effective. Zick came in, pitched an inning and 2/3, and certainly gave the Mariners a chance, hanging a lot of zeros, but the M's couldn't crawl back, and they fall in game one of the series, 3-2. Here's what the skipper, Scott Servais, had to say.
Yeah, he just fell out of whack mechanically. Was really rushing and then lost command, which is not usually his issue. he sometimes throws too many strikes. But, just got out of whack there in the fourth inning and just couldn't get through it.
Scott, that's three not good ones from him, though. At what point are you concerned?
Yeah, I think he's frustrated. Right now, as much as anybody, I got some double play balls early. Was rolling along, pitch count was down, but didn't execute and really just totally lost it. I mean, it's still early. Wade has a lot of track record, and certainly like having him out there and trust him. But he's frustrated right now. He's better than that.
Six hits from the offense, 2 runs too by Seager, big home run. So obviously nice to get him going a little bit tonight.
Yeah, we had some chances early in the game. Carrasco's good, obviously, but we just couldn't get the big two-out hit there early. It was nice to see Seager get rolling a little bit tonight. I thought Iannetta hit some balls hard, nothing to show for it. But, got to give them credit. They got the outs, big outs when they needed early in the game.
Your bullpen does it again. How important have they been so far this year?
They've been great, about as good as we could have imagined. Montgomery was really good tonight, coming in a tough spot, bases loaded. Gets out of it there and then allows us to save some other guys here as we go deeper in the series. So really, really happy with the transition he's made and where he's at. The confidence is coming, and, he's got good stuff. Let it eat, and that's what he's doing.
So Cleveland takes game one of the series. If the Mariners want to take this series, they have got to win today, and it's not going to get much easier as Danny Salazar will take the ball for Cleveland. The righty with pretty wicked stuff will go to the mound. He's off to a great start this year. His first start against Chicago, 5 1/3 innings, just 2 hits, fanned 7. And then against Tampa Bay, his last time out, 6 innings, 3 hits, 9 Ks. So through 2 starts, 11 1/3 inning, 16 strikeouts, and he's given up 1 earned run. He has walked 6 during that time. He's actually walked more then he's given up hits, 6 walks and 5 hits, but 16 punch outs. And you know, he's averages in his career nearly 10 strikeouts per nine. I mean, that's how dominant he has been in his career. So he's going to be tough for the Mariners, but the M's will counter with Taiwan Walker, one of their young budding stars of their own. That's why, I mean, this is a great pitching matchup. This should be a fun one. Danley Salazar against Taiwan Walker. You know, Taiwan Walker's off to a really good start as well for the Mariners. Two starts so far for Taiwan, a 2.25 ERA, six innings against Oakland, two runs, Fanning four, six innings against Texas, one run, Fanning four. He's walked just two so far in his 12 innings of work. 12 hits, two walks, Fanned eight. So pretty good start for Taiwan Walker. And again, he's going to have to keep it close against Salazar. And the Mariners will try and peck away, maybe do some damage against the bullpen, find a way to try and get the middle game of this series, and then set their sights on Thursday for day baseball to try and get the series win. Again, no podcast tomorrow on Thursday with an early start against Cleveland. So that gets you ready for what should be a good one today. I'm really looking forward to the ball game today between the Mariners and the Indians. And Cleveland, pretty interesting. Aaron Goldsmith, the chance to catch up with Jim Rosenhaus and give you a good look at Cleveland right now.
Rosie, this has been a little bit of an odd start for the Indians this year. Three of the Tribe's first seven games have been postponed because of weather. Do you feel like the Indians have been able to get any momentum going at all to start the season?
No, not at all. Actually, they played three straight down in St. Pete because it was inside. And then actually, the weekend was really nice here. But that first week was trouble. And you know, it's funny. I think it seems like every 5 years for a team in this part of the country, there's that disastrous first week or first home week, whatever. And you saw the schedule last year, and it had the Indians playing the Red Sox. And you knew wherever it was, whether it was here or Boston, it was going to be trouble. And, in fact, if it was at Fenway, they were saying, I don't know if we would have gotten any of the games in. So we got two of them in. Conditions were rough. And then Chicago, the following series at U.S. Cellular, was as difficult, I think, for the players as I've seen in a long time.
Well, we saw the Indians a number of times in spring training, and the conversation even back in spring was, when will we see Michael Brantley? When will we see Lonnie Chisenhall? Brantley, one of the best outfielders, an all-star 2 years ago, led the game in doubles last season. Chisenhall seemed like had a rebirth in right field at the end of last season. Any idea the timetable on these two?
Well, they've been saying for a couple of days that Chisenhall could be this week. So I think Brantley's a little bit further away, but the encouraging sign is they've both been playing in the minor leagues, whether it's AAA or AA, depending on which team is closer. And they've both been making good progress. With Brantley, though, he hasn't played back-to-back games yet, and they want to make sure he can do that before they turn him loose. And then they've been very cautious. They just want to make sure when he gets back that he can go ahead and play and that they don't have to let him play for 3 days and then it starts barking the shoulder and they have to shut him down for a little bit. So they've been real cautious about it, and it seems like a good plan, and he's making good progress.
The Mariners will not see Corey Kluber here on this trip to Cleveland, but they see Carrasco, they see Salazar as well. Last year, the Tribe's rotation led baseball in strikeouts. Fair to say that maybe more than any other team in baseball, at least on a short list, this Indians team once again is built around a rotation.
Absolutely. Everything you heard this winter, there was a lot of talk. Would the Indians make a deal to bring in more bats and try and get an offense percolating a little bit better? And they had all kinds of offers from different clubs for Carrasco, Salazar, and those were the two names that came up the most. But I think the longer the front office and manager Terry Francona talked about it, it's hard to get the kind of pitching that they have and then have it be under team control for an extended period of time like they have. And I think the proof was in the pudding in the offseason. You want to go out and sign a free agent, it's going to cost you $200 million. And the Indians can't do that. But they have five, almost six pretty good starters under team control for a long time, and they're happy with that.
A new face in the bullpen this year, Trevor Bauer. We've seen him in the rotation with mixed results over the year, a former first-round draft pick by the Diamondbacks. It's very early, but how has that transition been like for Bauer so far?
It's been a transition, but you know, he's starting, I think, to just embrace it because he's not going to be in the bullpen. This is not to make Trevor Bauer a relief pitcher. It was a case of the Indians have six good starting pitchers, and they didn't want to send one of them to the minor leagues, which would have been Cody Anderson. They felt he was ready to roll in the major league rotation. So Bauer found himself the odd man out. But with that said, Carlos Carrasco, the turning point in his career was about a four-month stretch he spent in the bullpen before returning to the rotation. And the Indians feel they can work, kind of fine-tune some things with Trevor Bauer, and it could really benefit him if and when he gets back into the rotation, and I think it's just a matter of when.
Now you bring up Carrasco, tonight's starting pitcher. Last year had a no-hitter, one out away from a no-hitter in Tampa Bay. Joey Butler broke it up. How good is his stuff? We know he throws very hard.
It's as good as I think anybody in the American League. Occasionally, it'll get away a little bit. He's not a finished product, I don't think by any means, but he's getting closer with every outing, it seems. He just seems primed for a big year. Now, he hasn't proven that he can take it from start to finish and be really consistent. He's had 2-3 month stretches where he's been just unhittable. So it'd be interesting to see how he fares from start one to start 32 or three, however many he gets.
Rosie, it's always great catching up with you. Thank you so much for the time.
Good to see you, Aaron.
And yesterday it was great to see Kyle Seager bust out, had the single, had the home run, and here he is with Shannon Dreyer.
Catching up with Kyle Seager. And Kyle, you're chattering already right now. You were out for early batting practice today, kind of different conditions.
Yeah, it was pretty cold out there. The wind is it's howling pretty good, and it's chilly.
Early spring games, you'll see that quite a bit. Hey, you guys just had a hitters meeting, and I've heard a couple of different things, that they're a little bit different this year. And obviously before the start of a series, you guys are going to sit down and talk. But what are these meetings like?
You know, just preparing, you know. I think you can, you know, be as prepared as you can going into a series. You know, we've talked about all sorts of stuff. Their team, you know, how we're going to play defensively, what we're thinking offensively, you know, going over the pitchers. You know, it's been pretty good.
Is there a different emphasis? I know a lot's been talked about different numbers, but is there anything different that you guys look at this year with Scott Servais and crew?
You know, I mean, we know more of the information. You know, we go into a little more detail, but you know, there's some similarities. You know, and Edgar was here last year, so you know, a lot of the hitter stuff is, you know, it's pretty similar as what he was doing.
What I understand is you guys like to talk to Edgar on a daily basis. It's not just that first day in on a series.
No. That's something that we actually changed when he took over last year. Is we'll go over each starting pitcher every day, as opposed to, you know, going over everybody the first game of the series, and then we do it on more of a daily basis.
Is that just kind of the advantage of having it that fresh, or do you get different things when you break it down like that?
You know, it's definitely a freshness thing. You know, if we know we're facing a guy on the third day and you hear about him, you know, maybe on the first day, maybe you don't pay as much attention. But, you know, it's something you go over a little bit more in detail and kind of approach-wise and everything.
Other thing I noticed is on the work assignments that were up on the board today, you actually have the starting pitcher, what he has, what his speeds are on his pitches, and the percentage that he throws them. Just anywhere where they can put information, it looks like they do.
Yeah, that was something that I think Prieto sets that up, and you know, that's been nice. And you know, there's the information's available. It's, you know, whether you want to use it. If you don't like it and you don't want to use it, you don't have to use it. But if it's something that you like, you can use it. So I mean, anytime you can you know, gather information if you want, it's a good thing.
You've always been a video guy. Are you using that any differently?
No, that's been pretty much the same.
And you have the access on the iPads. Do you use that?
Oh, yeah, that has been different. They, you know, they downloaded an app where we can, you know, talk. We can get the information beforehand, get our at-bats on them, and, you know, they kind of update it every series. So that's been pretty nice.
Do you kind of find yourself kind of doing that at odd times, or is it just when you're at the ballpark?
I try to not, but, you know, you look at it sometimes. You know, if there's something you're interested in, and, you know, if you can't really sleep or something, you can kind of take a look at it.
What have you been looking at of late? I know that you are a constant guy that's constantly tinkering and figuring out things. What are you looking at right now?
I'm trying to figure out how to get a hit, so that'd be step number one, I guess. But, no, it's not far off. It's something that, you know, obviously you'd like to have more hits, but I'm not necessarily stressing about it. I think it's, you know, it's part of the season. You go ups, you go your downs. You know, if you start in a not-so-good stretch, it definitely gets amplified. But, you know, this kind of stuff happens, and it'll be all right.
Are you at a point right now where you're keeping everything the same and happy with it, or are you still kind of looking at things?
No, you're definitely tinkering, definitely, you know, working with Edgar, working with the coaches, and, you know, trying to, you know, get back to, you know, what doing before that was being successful and, you know, figure out why it's not working now.
Yes, and one of our favorites, Greg Green, he gives you a look at, oh, some of the days you can really look forward to coming up on the homestand. Here he is with Aaron Goldsmith.
You know his voice. This is Greg Green, GG.
Nobody knows my parents know my voice.
Trying to build you up. The VP of all things cool with the Seattle Mariners swinging by here. Another just a terrific season, GG, lined up for the fans in terms of the swag. I mean, this is, I say swag, not everybody gets it. You got to be normally first of 20,000. So just get here relatively early. But you have brought with you a variety of just elaborate goodies to the booth.
I didn't realize there wouldn't be a camera here, so it doesn't really help that I have these. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun starting here in April. We got a couple of big giveaways coming up at the end of the month versus the Champion Royals. On Friday the 29th, the beard hat is back, and you actually look pretty good in it. You're modeling it now. The fuzzy blue beard looks good on you. The Mariners Northwest green cap. To top it off, and that's also a college night, so you put beard hat and college night together on Friday the 29th, and it's magic.
You're gonna be making friends, let me tell you.
A lot of friends. And then the next night, Saturday the 30th at 6:10, it's our first bobblehead night, leading off with the boomstick, and there you can see it, Aaron.
Oh, it's glorious.
Yeah, there's a Nelson Cruz leaning against a boomstick that's as tall as he is.
Taller.
And, yeah, it's maybe a little bit taller, depending on how he's bobbling at the time.
That's a good point.
But, yeah, the first 20,000 fans are going to get the boomstick, courtesy of our friends over at Root Sports.
And yeah, that is a fine-looking bobblehead. Can I ask, who goes into the idea of actually designing the bobbleheads?
You know, it's a committee. There's a bobblehead committee of about a dozen or so that sit in a conference room for about 4 or 5 hours.
A day?
Per player, yeah, in the off season and work on it.
Well, when somebody's time is up on that committee, let me in. I'd love to be a part of that.
We'll put you on a list. It's a long list to get on the committee, Aaron, but we will get your name on that.
Now, speaking of committees, this is a fabulous one. Every year there are multiple designs for the new King's Court T-shirt.
That's correct.
And this year, the King's Court Territory won out with the nameplate of Felix, the number 34, and the state of Washington in map form, but in a cool way. This is a fine shirt, and we already see hundreds of them in Kings Court already here today.
Yeah, fans are starting to pour in. Kings Court promotion, nothing like it in baseball. I know there's a lot of other teams starting to do it as well, but you know, it started here at Safeco Field, and Mariner fans have really taken it and making it their own with the K-card chants, and you know, the people that come dressed up in costume and sharing the turkey leg out there. It's one of a kind, and I can't wait to see this first quarter of the year with 3,000 plus fans out there.
I'm glad you brought that up. You know what they're saying right now in New York today? Harvey Day.
No, it's always a happy Felix Day, isn't it?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. You just got to know where it comes from.
It does.
You know?
It does. And it came from the fans. You know, the fans, they gave him the nickname King Felix. They started wishing each other happy Felix Day online. So Mariner fans know how to bring it, and they bring it every time in the King's Court.
You know, something we were talking about, because it came up spontaneously, organically on Bullpen Banter, Bark in the Park. Two Bark in the Park days. Three? We have three of them?
There's three of them. Check your calendar.
We did. We scanned the calendar. So I've got May 24th and August 9th as a couple of Bark in the Park days. But this has been a wild success.
It has been. Wild, pardon the pun, since they're domesticated, yeah. Right? Yeah. But, yeah, it's
here we go. You ready for this one?
A late break. This just in.
September 6th.
It's your third Bark in the Park. Yeah, three chances to come out. Bring your dog to the park. You get a ticket for the dog. They have their own seat.
Of course they do.
They have leashes. There's three different colored leashes. And it's just a blast. And then they get to do a lap around the bases. It's a run or a walk or a jog around the bases with your dog on the field after the game. Is there anything cooler than that?
Last year, am I remembering that a second one was added because the first one was so popular?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
There's some kind of stat floating out there. There's more dogs in Seattle than there are kids. And I think that might be true. When you see it bark in the park, there are a lot of people and dogs out here. And those are fun nights at the ballpark.
GG, Greg Green, VP of all things cool with the Mariners. Thanks for swinging by, dropping the mic, and bringing a little Macklemore flair to the booth.
Thank you. Always good to be here. I think that's your theme song, rest of the way.
Yeah, appreciate you looking out for me. I really do. There he is, Greg Green. Boy, we love having him, especially when you bring show and tell.
Ross Davis being held on by Sexton over at first base, playing just a little bit behind him. And now Jackson's pitch. Swinging a ground ball down to the second baseman. Wilson, he tags the runner there, goes to first, double play. Enrique Wilson tagged Russ Davis on the back, and Russ Davis is arguing with the second base umpire, Larry Barnett. He said he didn't touch it. And here comes Lou Piniella. The double play, of course, is going to stand. And Russ Davis is going to leave. Lou Piniella is going to plead his case to no avail. There are two outs here in the ninth inning. And perhaps they are arguing interference in the case of the second baseman, Enrique Wilson. And Lou out there showing what happened. Has both ends spread straight out as if to say, what I have to do? Here is what happened. And he's putting on quite a show for these fans here in Cleveland. Again, palms spread straight out. And this time, Larry Barnett throws his hand straight out. Lou has his hat off. Larry Barnett turns his back. Lou wants to get thrown out of his ball game with one out to go. And Lou Piniella finally turns around. And Larry Barnett retreats out on the greensward, out on the verdant grass of Cleveland, Ohio. And Lou Piniella, in exasperation and frustration, turns around for one last blast. And finally slowly walks off the diamond. That was quite a show by Lou. I think he's still in the ball game. I don't think Larry Barnett ejected him. So Piniella over toward the Mariner dugout will slowly get there. And here comes Shane Monahan. Monahan is one for three. Here comes Piniella again, and he's going to go back out. He says, oh, did you throw me out? And I think Larry Barnett said, yeah, you're out of the ball game. Lou says, what? Did you throw me out of the ball game? And now Lou, hands folded across his chest, jaw jutted out, right in the face of Larry Barnett. Can't read exactly what he's saying on his lips, and it's probably a good thing I can't, because I couldn't report it anyway. And Larry Barnett and Lou are still going at it. Lou's obviously been thrown out of this ball game. And Larry, and now he's got his cap off and throwing his cap down. And Lou's head bobbing back and forth like a hen picking up pieces of corn, and now kicks his cap once, misses it twice, kicks it the third time out onto the outfield grass, goes back. The other three umpires, the other two umpires joining Larry Barnett out there, the only man, Bill Miller, standing at home plate while Lou puts on one magnificent show here in Cleveland. Ah, yes, this will make a lot of the highlight reels, and Piniella is absolutely exasperated as he goes over, picks up his hat, and can't hang on to it. Or maybe didn't hang on to it, and first he kicks it again. As he broke, kicks it on to it. This is the greatest show by Piniella as a Mariner manager. He got distance that time. That was a three-pointer. He's going to kick it all the way to the Mariner dugout. He kicks it again high into the air. One ball and one strike. It was a thing of absolute baseball beauty. Here is the pitch. Swing and a foul straight back. The show that Piniella put on. That's his best show. And Mike Jackson now one strike away from putting this thing away for Mr. Burba. The pitch, swing and a high foul into the upper deck off the first base side. One ball and two strikes. He must have kicked his cap. Let me see, Kevin, 9-10 times. And then as he got over, he threw it back. Stands with an Indian fan, threw it right back. Here comes the 1-2 pitch, swinging a ground ball into second. It's going to be over.
See you later.